Thanks so much for inviting me. This morning, I'll not take too much of your time, but I'm going to mention a couple of things. Firstly, I'm going to do a bit of a recap about Safe Families and what we do, and actually tell you a bit about how your wonderful church has been involved and making that difference that you just mentioned, Mike, to other people's lives, and maybe bringing a bit of that dawn that you just mentioned there to families that need it. So I'm here to say thank you. And I'm also here to look for something as well today that I know that you'll be able to help me find. I'll come back to that a bit later on. So to begin with, I'd like to tell you a bit of a story about Safe Families. Back in America in 2003, there was a gentleman called Dave Anderson, and he's a child psychologist. And one day, he had a knock at his door, and it was a lady there, and she was saying, "Mr. Anderson, I need your help." And he said, "I'm not quite sure if I can do that for you. We have to wait until your children have been taken away from you before we can help." And this lady was persistent, and she said, "Mr. Anderson, you don't understand. I need your help now. Otherwise, something bad will happen." And Dave thought about this, and he went to speak to his wife, and he took in the children of this lady to help her through a rough patch, to help her through some difficult times. And it got Dave to thinking. He was a Christian. He went to church, and he went back to church. And he said, "It's a crazy situation here that we have families in need that have their children taken away before we can help them. We've got to do something a bit sooner." And from there, Safe Families began. And it now works across 30-odd states in America and has over 1,000 volunteers in Chicago alone. To bring it over here, there's a gentleman called Peter Vardy, or Sir Peter Vardy. You may recognise his name on garages. I think that's where he made most of his wealth. And Peter is a Christian. He has his own foundation that helps people. And he thought, well, we could do something with this in the UK. He approached the government and he said, "Can we try and do something like that here? People need help here, and surely people want to provide help." And the government said, "Well, okay." And Peter said, "Well, I'm going to give £2 million from my foundation to get this underway." Now, the government don't normally give that amount of money towards new things. And so Peter and the team prayed. There are only a few of them. And they prayed, and the government came back and they said, "Well, we'll match what you're doing, and we'll also see if it works. Important, we'll find out if it works. We'll study it at the end." And from there, Safe Families began in the UK. So, working with churches and recruiting wonderful volunteers, families began to receive help. And at the end of this little pilot in the Northeast, they discovered that, amongst other things, the number of children going into care actually reduced by up to 16%. And that's the banner headline, I guess. But behind all of that, of course, is the wonderful compassion and the warmth and the love and the faith and the feeling that these people gave to these families. And from those small beginnings, Safe Families now works across 38 authorities across the country. And thankfully, Lancashire is one of those, and it was my colleague Rosie, I think, Mike and Dave, that came to you firstly, and Rosie covers the Sefton and Knowsley. And this is the first part of audience participation, folks, because we like to get people involved here. So from those beginnings, and actually going to churches and knocking on churches' door and saying, you know, "Can we help you do God's work and achieve your vision and mission by reaching out to those in greatest need?" We have, and if you'd like to grab your numbers and stand up and hold your numbers up to the audience, guys, and I think I might have you in the wrong order, but you get the drift of marvellous. Thank you so much. If you can hold those numbers up, we have over 1,000 churches now that partner with us, and thankfully your wonderful church here is one of those. And if I would like to swap your one for a five, if you'd like to hold that up, that's around the number of wonderful volunteers that we have across the country at the moment, and some of which are in this room today. So thanks, guys. You can sit down now. That help has impacted upon over 6,000 families. And my friend Sarah tells me this morning, actually, that has actually equated to over 16,000 children that have received help in the UK over the past 10 years. To bring it more locally, actually, from your wonderful church here, Jane and David, you'd like to hold your numbers up and get them in the right order. You've got a 1 and a 2, so if you'd like to hold those up and show everybody, the number 12, fantastic. Now, that's the number of families you've actually helped from your church here. And now, thank you very much, guys, and Sarah. Well, you've been left with both numbers. So if you'd like to share your numbers of 36 children have also actually benefited from your kindness, from your wonderful church, Mike, and thank you so much for that. Now, you might think, well, how have they benefited? And I'm going to ask Wendy, if you're still okay, to come and help me this morning in a second to tell me about how Wendy has helped. But just to tell you how people broadly help us, you can become a family friend. And that means just spending an hour a week with somebody who's in a bit of a crisis, in a bit of need. We get families referred to us from social services. So, of course, by the fact that they're already being helped by social services, they're in a spot of bother. They might get other bits of kind of professional help around them. But I describe our help as kind of the mortar between the bricks, I suppose, is the best way of describing us. We're not paid to be there. We are there because of the kindness and big hearts of people that want to simply go and actually spend a bit of time having a cuppa with mum that might just be going through a really bad time, that's feeling a bit anxious, that might be very depressed, that might just need that cuppa and somebody to chat to. Might be that they'd like somebody just to take the children out for an hour, just so that they can have that bit of relaxing downtime, get those bits of things done that are impossible when you've got the kids running around. And crucially, that time is provided because you want to be there. You are there for them. You're not being paid to be there. And that's a critical difference. So my friend Catherine, who I work with, she gets the notes from the social work team. She goes out to meet with the family. And she kind of works out if what the social worker has said is what it is on the tin. And then she comes to me and she says, can you find a volunteer to help? Or in Wednesday's case, she'll come to Rosie and she'll say, we've got a family here. And hopefully that will be something that I might be telling to Jane and Dave very shortly as our newest volunteers, who will actually become fully fledged, say, families volunteers this very week. I know. And you are, I was saying before, you are our record holders. You've gone through our process and our system so quickly that you are the quickest people to have done that ever. So I've got a huge thank you to say to you for that. So you can spend that hour. Some families actually offer to host, as Dave did over in America, they offer to host children overnight if that's required. Some people bring to us a skill. I went to a meeting the other day, and it was a curate, actually, at this church, and he said, I speak 5 languages. I can help. If you have a family that comes to you, and one of the languages he spoke was the predominant language for Afghanistan, in Afghanistan, and so he said, I can do that. We have some folks up at a wonderful church in Preston who have a number of people that can sign language, and they offer us that resource. We have people who've said to us, I can't do that, and I can't do that, but you know, if anybody needs something, let me know. And we've had people that have bought a bed for a family. Amazing. We have people that give. We have people that give financially to help. We have people that, and I went to a church the other week, and this gentleman came, and he was in his late 70s, and he said, I can't do any of those things, but what I can do is I can pray for you, and I can pray for the families. And I said, that's great. You can be a prayer partner. And I know very well that John today will be praying for everybody in every situation. And again, that's wonderful. So people can be involved in various ways. But Wendy, if you'd like to come and join me. And we had a chat the other week, didn't we?
We did.
And you kindly said that you would come and join me. And yeah, normally at this point, we usually play a video and we show a family that's been helped. And this is the very first time, this is new for me too, that we have a super real life example of a wonderful person that actually, probably nearly a couple of years ago now, you said, well, in fact, I think I can offer some time and I can think I can do something. So can you tell me though, what got you to doing something? What inspired you?
Well, I think we had a text go around. This was sort of during COVID, the first lockdown. And I think there was a text that went round saying that they're looking for volunteers for safe families. Can you offer some time? Have you got a skill? Can you do anything to help a family in need, sort of thing? So I thought, well, do you know what? I felt God prompting me, in all honesty, to say, because you all know where I live, which is an amazing place. Mm-hmm. And we have the most wonderful horses. A lot of you have met my horses, and Josh in particular. I know the children have gone out, but nearly every child in this church has had a ride on Josh or something. And they've all really benefited. They've all had a lovely time. And he's such a good boy. And I thought, maybe I could sort of say, would you like to come and play with my pony? In a nutshell. You know, just to give them that experience. I don't feel comfortable, say, with teenagers going and doing teenagery things, because that's not me. But I thought in my own environment, mm-hmm. I could perhaps provide an insight into something we've never had a go at before.
Yeah. And so from that, you kind of went forward. You went through our kind of process that, Jane and Dave will probably testify, it's quite a thorough thing to go through, isn't it? You've got to invest quite a bit of time, haven't you?
It was all by Zoom meetings.
And yeah, when you did it, it was all in the pandemic as well. So, my word, so you invested a bit of time there already. And then my friends, I think it was probably Rosie that sent along you've helped a couple of families or so far, but one that we chatted about in particular the other week, we'll call her Fiona for this purpose. But the young lady that didn't really speak much, did she?
No, she was a self-imposed mute. Bless her. I mean, she did have other issues. She was about 11 or 12 when I first met her, and she came along with a mum. And she didn't speak. She had a very stable home life, but I think her older brother, she had two brothers, but one in particular had his own problems, and she was very intimidated by him. And she was the sort of little girl, when you looked at her, she was sort of, very cowed and submissive. And she was just about to start to go to high school. So, yes, she came along with a mum. And at first, she would just stand there and, she wouldn't engage at all. But as time went on, she started grooming Josh and stroking him. And she would lead him out. And then we got her on board, because at one point, Mum said, she'll never get on him. She did. And then, so she that's rabbit in the headlights. And then we just started walking round, and bless her, by the end of, she was with me for a year, not every week. We sort of met every 3 weeks, because it was quite a long time while she was with us. But by the end of that, she was smiling. She was saying the odd words to her mum. She never actually spoke to me. But never mind. But I got smiles. I did get smiles. And she was able to take Josh by herself around the arena and be happy to do that. So,
That was fantastic. And I'm going to tell you something in a second that we didn't discuss the other week. So, a bit of a surprise for you. But what did you kind of think that the outcome was for you? You mentioned something to me the other day, and this isn't to put you on the spot, but I'll remind you of your words. You said, I've been blessed, you said.
Yes. I mean, we were put on this earth to be a blessing to others, but Yeah, I am blessed, and I have been blessed. I've had two little girls that, as a family, we got to know reasonably well, because again, they came for a year, and by towards the end of the time, you know, they would come. They'd come and ride Josh, both independently, chattering away, big smiles on their faces. And then, you know, we'd go back home and Jamie would be playing football with Mark on the lawn and they'd go and join in. You know, it was lovely to see. It gave you sort of a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Oh, that I describe that as that ready breck feeling. You remember the old advert and you had an orange glow in your tummy, didn't you, after you've had your ready breck? I think that's a wonderful way of describing it, that orange glow in your tummy. Well, thanks for describing that. That's brilliant. And the one thing that I found out afterwards, I spoke to Linda back at work, and I said, oh, Wendy's helping me out at church. And she said, I'll just send you this. And what she sent me was actually the kind of summary, because after the period of time, my colleague Catherine in Lancashire, she goes out to the family, meets with the social worker, and quite often, when the social workers are having their meetings of all the different people who've got a finger in the pie, there can be quite a lot of negativity sometimes because there's a problem here, there's a problem there. But in our case, often we are the shining light because we're able to say, do you know, that young lady actually has been consistently to Wendy's home. She's developed a skill. She's overcome a fear. And it's wonderful. And quite often, the feedback that we give for that family is the most positive thing out of the whole thing. So this is a bit of the feedback from actually the first young lady that you spoke about, the one that was kind of selective mute. So as you mentioned, she had quite a bit of a trouble with her older brother. She was fearful of him, as was mum, I think, as well. So they wanted for the young lady to have an opportunity for respite and support outside of the family home to reduce the anxiety she experiences every day and promote positive experiences of trust, support and communication. At that time, the family didn't have any extended family support. And because of COVID, they felt that impact of isolation even more, as lots of people did. So she came along to you for that period of time. And one of the social workers mentioned at the end that the family are without doubt very happy with the progress made. She's developed a relationship with you. And even though she didn't speak, she developed that relationship, overcoming her anxieties. And at home, talks. And she didn't do a lot of that previously. She didn't do a lot of that. And she's put in brackets, despite her selective speaking and mutism, she talked about her experiences positively. So the very fact you'd given her that opportunity to come and meet Josh and have a ride had such an impact. The family did gain other support, but this type of support, the support you provided, has been brilliant. Brilliant was the word. So the improvements for the young girl have had a very positive impact for both parents. Dad actually joined in, which was another thing. And in the past, the young girl had only communicated with mum. She'd only communicated with mum, but she was able, through her experience and talking about Josh, to actually have a relationship with Dad as well. All around, they found it a very positive experience, and it's been perfect for them. So you did that for them. I'm sorry I didn't warn you about that, but I think it's important to be said, and it just really recognises the efforts that you made. And even mum said that they're having chats about the visits when they get home. They would have never done that before. Not only learning new things about horses, but it's given them something to talk about together. She's starting to talk more at home and in school. Which was a huge thing. So I've got to say a massive thank you again, Wendy. That's your bit for now. Thank you so much for joining me, and in particular this morning as well. So I guess the common thing is that we all need help, don't we, at some point. At this point, we normally tell a story from the Bible about Moses. And as Moses was leading the Israelites into the desert, they came across a group of folks called the Amalekites who, Joshua was leading the army, and Moses understood that if he held his arms aloft with his staff, that the army and those around him would do well. They'd prevail. But of course, it takes a bit, doesn't it, to keep your arms up like that? And gradually, as the day went along, Moses' arms grew tired. Aaron and Hur spotted this, and they came to his aid, and they found a rock for him to sit on. They raised up his arms aloft again, and things went better. And Joshua did prevail at the end of the day. So, in safe families, I guess that's kind of the thing that our wonderful volunteers do. They lift up those arms. It'd be a bit odd for us to go around these days, wouldn't it, and just lift somebody's arm up. But the thing that we probably do more realistically these days is put an arm around people and show that compassion and that caring and that love that Wendy showed to that young girl and other families as well. Now, I mentioned today that I was coming to look for something, guys, and in actual fact, you've already helped me out greatly with audience participation, but there's one final bit of audience participation that I would like to ask you to do. If you'd like to look underneath your seats, you will find perhaps a letter on a piece of laminate. If you're fortunate enough to find one of those, if you'd like to come up to the front, and I can offer you an incentive rather than a bribe that we were talking about before, but I will exchange your letter for a Terry's chocolate orange. Oh, as if by magic. Now you have to stay with me. Now there you go. Oh, well, that was meant to be, wasn't it? And it was also meant to be that. Now there's another. Now, if you can, there is underneath another seat somewhere that isn't occupied. So if you want to receive the final Terry's chocolate orange, then please help me by that. It is out there somewhere. Oh, super job. Now, guys, your next task, before I can give this last orange away, is to make the word that it's meant to be here. No. Oh, yes, if you go that way. You're okay where you are, Jane? Yeah. Well, that's okay, because if you're there, you're right. Can I move you over there next to Wendy, and Jane's okay at the end? I will reward you with your Terry chocolate orange there. So if you'd like to hold those up. And there we are. So, thank you so much, guys. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for inviting me along. You've certainly given me hope. Of course, back at our place, Sarah, we'll certainly be praying for Millie, when we get back on Monday. And we certainly hope that things go very well for Millie and family from there. And thank you very much again for having me.